On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Marcus Barrhall goes solo to talk about the loss to the Orlando Magic, the sixth straight for Brooklyn. What happened down the stretch? Markelle Fultz went off. Spencer Dinwiddie could not contain him, and Joe Harris was not enough. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Marcus Barrhall. Josh is off today. He'll be back in your ears tomorrow to recap the Nets-Thunder game, which I'll talk a little bit about at the end of this podcast. So it's just a solo one from me right now on a Tuesday. Shout out to I Love McConan. One thing I did not love was the Brooklyn Nets performance last night. In their loss to the Orlando Magic, it was their sixth straight defeat. They fell 101-89. The offense was terrible. I'll get into that. The defense had moments where it looked pretty good. I'll get into that as well. But first, I do want to start with that offensive performance. Things were not good. The Nets scored 18 points in the fourth quarter after they erased what was a 16-point lead that the Magic had built up. The Nets played great in the third quarter, outscored Orlando 32-23, came all the way back, like I said, from down 16, and actually took the lead 78-76 in this one, thanks to a Wilson Chandler bucket early on in the fourth quarter. And then from there, things kind of collapsed. The Magic went on a 15-1 run to push their lead back up to an insurmountable margin. Markelle Fultz was just driving the ball at will, going right at Spencer Dinwiddie time after time, going right into his body, using his length, showing maybe not why he was the number one pick, because he's obviously, he's probably never going to live up to that billing, but he is proving to be a capable NBA player. He had a career-high 25 points in this game, 11 of 20 shooting. He did everything that the Magic needed him to in this game. Him, DJ Augustine scored the ball efficiently in the first half as well, and it was kind of deja vu for the Nets with that Raptors game a couple days ago, where they're playing a team, they look maybe solid to start. The Nets had a 2-point lead after the first quarter in this one, but once again it was that point guard, that guard position that kind of torched them offensively. And DJ Augustine, like I mentioned, hit a couple shots. Markelle Fultz was really the main guy doing the scoring in this one. Him and Augustine were the only guys to score more than 12 points for Orlando. And then in that Raptor game previously, it was Fred VanVleet, it was Kyle Lowry doing a lot of the scoring for the opposition. And it's a little bit different than what it has been in years past for Brooklyn, where they've struggled against bigger-bodied centers. Jared Allen would kind of get pushed around by the likes of Enes Kanter or Miles Turner or Nikola Vucevic, who the Nets actually did a good job on, at least in terms of his shooting. Vooch was 3 for 12 in this game, only had 11 points. But the problems come when he has 24 rebounds, like he did in this game, including 5 offensive. Aaron Gordon, similar story. Seemed like he could kind of score when he wanted to. He was 5 for 10, just didn't take a ton of shots. Only 11 points for him, but he also had 14 rebounds, 3 offensive. And the Nets, as a team, were out-rebounded in this game 60-46. So we know that the Nets are a small team. You know, they play mostly traditional center in either Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan, but then at the four position, it's either Torian Prince, who's a decent rebounder for his size, but he is undersized. You've got Rhodey Krugs, who is long but rail thin. You've got Wilson Chandler, who's definitely past his prime. So the Nets don't really have a ton of size up front to go along with their center. So if a guy like Vooch is boxing out Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan, it's just going to be tough for the Nets to get a rebound, which is what happened in this game. And the Orlando Magic took a lot more free throws than the Nets. They kind of were the aggressors in this game. And I want to talk a little bit about those Markelle Fultz drives late in the fourth quarter. He scored 7 straight points on 2 really nice drives, then he hit a corner 3 to push the Magic out in front, 85-78 at that point. And it was disheartening to see because you guys know I love Spencer Dinwiddie. Josh and I, he's probably our favorite player on the Brooklyn Nets, but this was a little tough to watch because Fultz just went right into his chest, and Dinwiddie, I don't know if he's exhausted from carrying a big load. He shot pretty poorly in this game, 6 for 19, 16 points, didn't get to the line a ton, was only 2 for 4 from there. Much like most of the Nets, couldn't hit anything from 3, 2 for 10 from beyond the arc for Spencer Dinwiddie in this game. I don't know if he maybe doesn't have the legs for it, but he just was not giving good contests on those Fultz drives. Fultz just kind of backed him down, turned around, and was right under the rim every time. So you got to give better force inside when you're going against a guy like Fultz, who, you know, he hit 2 threes in this game, but he's not going to burn you from the outside. That's not his game, especially with that hitch in his jumper, all that stuff with his shoulder. He's a guy who is much more comfortable driving to the basket, spinning, cutting baseline, that kind of thing. So it was tough to watch. And I know Spence's had to carry a huge load these last 24 games without Kyrie Irving. The Nets are 12-12 without him. They've managed to stay afloat. They're 3 games under .500, which is tough because of this recent stretch where they were 3 games over .500 and have now lost 6 straight. But still, overall, I think you have to be incredibly impressed with the job Spencer Dinwiddie has done. But it is time to wonder if maybe this has all been wearing on him. And, I mean, there's a reason he hasn't been a starter in the past. It might just be a little bit too much to be asking of him at this point in the season. You know, he's played basically 2 months now as the team's starting point guard number one option, and they've been a playoff team pretty much that whole time. So I think he's obviously still got a lot more in the tank for the rest of the season. This is a back-to-back now tonight with that Thunder game coming up. But with Caris LeVert back into the fold tonight, hopefully. And Dinwiddie only played 29 minutes in the game last night, but still, he's doing a lot on the ball. Every time he's on the court, he has the entire defensive attention focused on him. And it's just a lot being asked of him. I know Josh ranted a little bit in the last podcast about LeVert being out for injury maintenance or like rest coming back from an injury, which was confusing because this is not a cardio injury. This is not a lower leg injury. This is not something where he needs to get back into shape. You would assume that he's still either on the treadmill or on the stationary bike doing something with the cardio king, Wilson Chandler, while he was out. It was just a thumb injury. You know, you can still do a lot of the things that an NBA player needs to do to stay in shape off the court. So it didn't make a ton of sense to us that LeVert wasn't playing in this Orlando Magic game. And I know it's a back-to-back, but like I just said, this is not the kind of injury where, at least to my knowledge, that there's risk of re-injury from playing more, at least more so than any other injury that might pop up. So a little bit confusing there, but he will be back tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So hopefully that takes some of the burden off Dinwiddie, and maybe he can then turn some of his focus onto the defensive side of the ball, because the Thunder also have two great guards, a lot like these teams that the Nets have been playing recently. They've got Chris Paul, they've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, so definitely a tough matchup for Brooklyn. I'm not sure who we'll see on who. Maybe LeVert takes Shai, being that LeVert's a little bit longer and a little bit quicker laterally. We'll see about that. But back to the Magic game, another guy who struggled once again was Taurean Prince. 2 for 11 from the field, 2 for 9 from 3. And I have to agree with the halftime comments from Jim Spanarkle on the Yes halftime show. Prince has just been settling way too much for threes. It seems like in this game, at least, he would catch the ball in the corner, pump fake, and get the defender on a great fake, drive past him into the lane, and then rather than either pulling up for a short mid-range shot, which is like inefficient, but if it's wide open, it's definitely more efficient than a contested three. Instead of doing that or going into the body of some of the Magic big men, maybe trying to get them into foul trouble or trying to at least pull them out of the play so that if you miss a layup that Vucevic is contesting, you know, Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan is maybe then not boxed out. Maybe you can crash the offensive glass that way. Instead of doing either of those things, Prince would drive in, make like a jump pass to kick it out, and things would kind of be reset. And it was tough because Sarah Kustak on the broadcast was talking a lot about how the Nets were playing good offense, a lot of driving kick stuff, which that is effective to a point in getting you three-pointers. The Nets shot 47 threes again in this game, but they weren't hitting them. They were 10 for 47 in the game, 21% from three-point range. And at a certain point on those plays, like that one that Prince had, not to like single him out too much, but he's been playing really poorly, on those types of plays, at a certain point you've got to just go up with it on the drive. And there were so many times in this game where if he had just gone up, even if he misses, like it's, like I said, it's a shot where you're drawing more defensive attention to you and you're at least keeping the defense honest, because I felt like towards the end of that game, they knew he wasn't going to take any twos. They knew he was either going to shoot a three, which is why they sold out so hard on those pump fakes, or he was going to pump and drive and then kick it back out to someone else. And the Nets just don't have the juice driving from the perimeter outside of Spencer Dinwiddie to create a ton of looks. Like, the whole thing about driving kick is that you have to have defensive attention on the drive so that you can kick to open shooters. When Prince drives, he's not drawing any extra defensive attention, so those shooters that he kicks to aren't open, and the result is that the Nets just kind of swing the ball around the perimeter until someone has to chuck up a three with like 3 or 4 seconds left, or if the ball ends up in Spencer Dinwiddie's hands, maybe he's able to drive into like a contested floater. Sometimes he'll get fouled on that, sometimes he won't. But that's not the kind of offense that is sustainable. It's not the kind of offense that the Nets need, especially in the fourth quarter when they've been struggling to score points. Like I mentioned earlier, 18 points in the fourth quarter in this one, another struggle down the stretch to create offense. And, you know, Jean and Musa played pretty well. Theo Pinson got a few more minutes than he has with LeVert back out in this one. And I was a little bit confused about the rotations that Kenny used in the fourth quarter. You know, the lineup that brought the Nets back into the game featured guys like Jean and Musa. It featured Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot, who had another good game. I know he struggled in the Raptors game, but on the whole, in this recent stretch, he's played well. He had 9 points, was 4 of 9 from the field, had a really nice reverse layup on a drive in this game. To see him attacking the basket, to see Jean and Musa, who did not attempt a three in this game, despite that being the thing he was kind of billed as, still got up 4 field goal attempts, 4 free throws, so he was doing things that were a little bit out of what is expected of him, and that's kind of what I think I'm asking of Taurean Prince, is to expand his game, diversify his offensive profile, and then also a guy like Garrett Temple, who was 2 for 13 in this game, 1 for 8 from 3. Feels like those two guys have really struggled this recent stretch. Temple had a good run of play recently where he was kind of operating as a secondary ball handler, being the point guard with the second unit. Again, it's similar to Dinwiddie, but Dinwiddie's obviously much more talented. Seems like Temple's a little bit overexposed now, which kind of goes for Prince as well. Like, kind of this whole Nets team, they've been ravaged by injuries, and guys are being asked to do way too much. Obviously, that still shouldn't result in a 6-game losing streak, but, you know, that does kind of explain a lot of the poor play. You just need to get stops, and you need to score the basketball in the fourth quarter. There's not much else to it. Like, the Nets have been in these games at various points. They get down big, or they build up a lead and blow it, but regardless, they're still competitive with these teams that are playoff teams. Like, the Magic now are the 7 seed by percentage points over the Nets. The Raptors have played really well. The Thunder tonight are looking like they're going to be a playoff team in the West, so it's not like the Nets are losing to the Hawks or anything, but still, you've got to compete harder, and it is not a good sign that in the fourth quarter, when things get tight and the ball is maybe forced out of Spencer Dinwiddie's hands, or opponents are more likely to help off of their guys because they know no one else is going to beat them, that the Nets can't really score in those situations. So that all needs to be cleaned up. Shifting gears here, I did want to talk a little bit about some of the positives for the Brooklyn Nets in this game, because I'm an optimistic guy. That's really the only reason, because there weren't a ton, but there were some. So I mentioned TLC earlier. He played well in this one. 9 points for him. He and Jean and Musa kind of sparked that run in the third, at the end of the third quarter and at the start of the fourth. Shout out as well to Rhody Kurucs and Wilson Chandler during that run. Chandler didn't have a great game overall, but played well in that key stretch for Brooklyn. And Kurucs, he still is playing like in that 15-minute range, somewhere around there. He played 12 in this one, but like Josh and I have said of late, it's good to see him on the court. He brings a dimension of scoring that the Nets don't really have. He also, on the defensive end, has that length that Josh and I have talked about, which is really, really useful. And the Nets' defense was mostly solid in this game. I mentioned the lapses with faults late in the fourth quarter, but on the whole, they played pretty well defensively in this one. 101 points for the Magic. That's pretty average, I would say. Maybe a little bit below average in terms of their points scored. But the main guy I wanted to talk about as a positive was, of course, Beef Jerky Joe, Joe Harris. 16 points in this game for him, 6 of 11 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3. The only Net who really had a consistent thing going offensively in this one, Joe, especially in the first half, was hitting threes. He was getting the basket on drives. He was doing exactly what Taurean Prince should be doing. He was just diversifying his offensive profile, getting to the basket, keeping the defense honest so that when he does drive, they have to respect his willingness to shoot, which opens up passing lanes. And then it also, the fact that he is driving, means that they have to not close out as hard on his three-pointers, which obviously Harris is a master at. So he's given a little bit more space on those shots as well. And really, it just all kind of feeds off of each other. And the more you're doing one thing, the more the defense has to respect it, which means that they have to take their attention off of something else, which maybe is more of your strength. So good job by Joe in this one offensively. He was really the biggest bright spot and the main bright spot in this one. So just wanted to shout him out. He has played well of late as well. And yeah, it's frustrating to watch a guy like Prince who, not to just keep ragging on the guy, but like you see that he has all the tools to be a great defender. You see that he has the size to be a powerful force driving to the basket, but he just doesn't always focus on defense, and he seemingly does not want to score on drives for some reason. So maybe he can take a page out of Joe's playbook going forward and do a little bit more of that. We will see. But regardless, the Nets need to be prepared for this game with the Thunder tonight. And Prince might end up spending some time on Danilo Gallinari, who is averaging 18 points per game and is a great shooter from the outside. He's also got great size, so could be a tough matchup. Maybe we see Rhody on him a little bit. But the Thunder have played really well of late. They're 9-2 in their last 11 games. They're 20-16 on the season. Definitely overachieving, but it looks sustainable. Like, they have good players. They've got CP, they've got Shea, they've got Gallo, they've got Steven Adams. They've got guys who have been around. They've got guys who have won at very high levels in Chris Paul and Steven Adams. And yeah, they just play hard. We'll see what tonight brings. It's the start of a four-game homestand for the Nets. 7 of their next 8 are at home, so hopefully this is a chance for them to right the ship, turn things around. The game tonight is on NBA TV, so a little bit of national spotlight. Hopefully that spotlight doesn't become the Nets losing their 7th straight, which is definitely possible because this is a tough matchup for Brooklyn. Again, we've got the two guards with great scoring ability, and we've got Gallo on the outside, who is going to be a matchup problem for Brooklyn. A place for the Nets to try to take advantage would probably be Joe Harris once again, because you figure one of Shea or CP is going to be on Dinwiddie and the other will probably be on LeVert. So that does leave Joe hopefully some room to come around picks with less defensive attention on him. And hopefully he can take advantage, and hopefully LeVert is able to play more. I know Kenny said that he's going to be playing a little bit more minutes in this game. Don't know if that means 20, if that means 25, if that means 30. Probably, I would guess, around 20 minutes. So hopefully he's able to make more of an impact. He made a good impact in his last game, but it's just tough when you're only playing so many minutes. So hopefully we get more LeVert tonight. Hopefully the Nets get off the schneid and snap this 6-game losing streak and inch closer to 500. So Josh will have a podcast for you guys about that game following it. Make sure you're subscribed to the Locked On Nets podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. You can follow me at Marcus Barrahall. Josh is at JMBass_. And yeah, Josh will be back with you guys tomorrow. I'll be back shortly after that with him. And until next time, be well. Bye.